This is U.S. and EU legal updates. Clearly a page turner, but I've realized this year has been an interesting year in watching one half of my career path run headlong into the other half of my career path as a information security professional. At least that's what I, you know, put on my tax forms. And it's been interesting because I've watched people freak out. And usually people are freaking out about other things. But this year has been the first year I've watched people freak out about how the law is going to affect their jobs, their companies. And a lot of my tasks have been telling people to calm down and wait. But standard disclaimers, because what kind of lawyer would I be if I didn't do a disclaimer? I am a lawyer. I'm just not your lawyer. Some of the laws I'm going to discuss are new, which means that just because I can read them and have some guesses, I may be wrong. Or as I like to say, until I'm wearing black robes, my opinion means nothing. And that's a scary, scary thought, me as a judge. I have been wrong before. There's an article back when I worked as a tech writer in law school, and I remember saying my favorite stupid thing to say was, why on earth is Apple putting television shows in the iTunes store? Who's going to pay money for television shows? Yeah, and I think I made some comment like cocaine must be cheap in Cupertino. Clearly, I can be very, very wrong. So accept that. And when I'm wrong, I'll admit it and try to tell everyone that I was wrong and how to fix my screw up. I'm not speaking for any of my clients or my employer if I still have any at the end of this talk. So why are there laws affecting security, privacy, and our jobs if we're somehow in the technology, IT, security industry? A lot of these are attempts to fix problems, right? Legislatures react to, we see a problem, our constituents have come and complained to us. How can we involve ourselves, use the power of the state to make this problem not as bad, right? Like think of the great deal of pearl clutching we've had about, oh my God, Facebook holds all this data and they do things with it, right? We've been smug about that, but explaining that to mom, explaining that to your friends, and we have to not be the smug, oh, you should have known. Like it's something we have to remind people that, and I know it's trite, but if it's for free, the product is you. We say that like it's a mantra, but it's a reminder that, you know, Facebook and Google and all that, they clearly churn through our data, and they're not providing all these services because they think it might be valuable. It is incredibly valuable, and the legislatures and whatnot are going to respond to this by saying, well, instead of saying, you know, fool, you knew I was a scorpion. Instead, it's no, we have the power to regulate Google and Facebook. We can do things. We might do things that are ham-fisted and clumsy, but the law can be used to do this. And it's coming from a place of, let us fix this problem as we have identified it. The problem is that sometimes they come from a fundamental, and I won't call it a misunderstanding, it's a different understanding of how things work. Right? The privacy, your right to Google and Facebook and Apple and Amazon not doing odd things with your data and figuring out who you are and selling that on and bundling it versus you as a product, right? You think you have these privacy rights, but you also want Google Docs. You want to stay in touch with your family in a nice, easy manner via Facebook. You want entertainment, so you go to YouTube. Well, they're collecting all that data and the working that out as a society is how, and it's manifested in some of these laws. The free flow of information versus criminal facilitation. You know, we all believe information should be free, but what happens when that flow of information is a part of something facilitating criminal acts? We react, you know, and instead of just shrugging our shoulders and going, well, information wants to be free, well, some legislator is going to come up with, there's a way to fix this. And it might be clumsy and ham-fisted and actually counterproductive. But the problem is that the legislatures hate saying, oh, you can't do anything about that. I'm like, damn, we can do something about that. And they want to be seen to be doing things that concern you as constituents, you as citizens. So first one I want to talk to, because this has been more and more interesting, the SESTA-FOSTA Act. This is an attempt to regulate internet activities that facilitate prostitution and sex trafficking. I caught an earlier talk where the presenter mentioned that they're really, you know, it's a fuzzy line. Well, not under the law. Prostitution is a different crime than sex trafficking. But what Congress did with this was, for the longest time, Section 230 of the Communications Decency Act was a safe harbor that allowed that if you are a provider of a service, you are not liable for the words of people using your service. Simple rule, right? The phone company is not liable for a murder planned using their technology if they don't know about it, if they don't do a thing about it. So we decided to say, like, look, to let the internet grow, to allow companies to use it in new and interesting ways for us to communicate with one another, we allowed that, well, it can be a Wild West. We can allow horrible things to be communicated across your lines, and you don't really have an affirmative requirement to go out there and police your stuff. And you can do so if you feel that, well, it makes the service better. The great purge at Reddit. Well, we find that some people are being assholes on the internet, and that drives other people out. Well, we'll cut this group of people out to prevent this people from leaving. Okay, but it wasn't required to by law. So Section 230 said you had immunity for even, for anything criminal happening on your networks. And SESTA-FOSTA removed that immunity for sex trafficking and facilitation of prostitution. That immunity was actually fairly broad. Even if the content's paid for by the provider, there's an AOL case where they hired a conservative columnist to post stuff. And they paid and said, you know, we'd like you to talk about things and put up content. He was accused of slandering someone, and they sued AOL, saying he's not just a user, he's working for you, he's an employee. And court said, nope, he's clearly a content provider, and AOL is a interactive computer service. Section 230 protects you. You can sue the individual columnist for this slander, but you can't sue AOL. Even if the content's edited, they actually had evidence that AOL had cut down and modified the document before being posted, and yet it was still okay. AOL was immune. And even if the content is describing a criminal activity, the provider is not liable. That's the old rule under this. SESTA-FOSTA comes in and says, there's a new rule. If you own, manage, operate, or attempt to own, manage, and operate an interactive computer service with the intent to promote or facilitate the prostitution of another. And that's kind of a wordy way to say, if you use the internet to operate some kind, to somehow facilitate prostitution, you are a sex worker and you advertise, you are a procurer, you are a pimp, that not only is the prostitute themselves liable, the interactive computer service can be liable for the crime of being used to transmit that information. there's an aggravated violation which allows greater criminal penalties, but also a private right of action for anyone injured by it, for promotes or facilitates the prostitution of five or more persons, and reckless disregard that such conduct facilitated sex trafficking. Now, sex trafficking is different than prostitution. Sex trafficking is the using force, fraud, coercion, or some kind of threat to make someone operate in operate as a sex worker, especially if they are of underage, if they're below the age of 18. So knowingly assisting, supporting, or facilitating sex trafficking is also a law, is also against the law. It's no longer protected by Section 230. So what does that do to ISPs? What does that do to content providers, website providers? Okay, sex trafficking recruits, entices, harbors, transports, provides, obtains, advertises, maintains, patronizes, or solicits a minor for a commercial sex act. So using an interactive computer service or an interactive computer service somehow facilitating these acts is criminal in and of itself. If you knowingly assist, support, or facilitate, now, assist, support, or facilitate is awfully vague. If you run an ad that's clearly supporting or facilitating, if you're taking money, if you transmit money, if you're PayPal and you transmit money for the payment of a sex trafficked person, you have broken sesta fosta. So what are the impacts this is going to have on us? It clearly criminalizes interactive computer services that are dedicated to sex workers, such as Eros, Backpage, Rent Boy. If you are a professional sex worker and you're using there's an ICS dedicated to you providing contact information, providing photographs, providing availability information, providing anything that furthers your trade. That interactive computer service is now liable criminally and monetarily for your use of it. So clearly there's an intent to promote for, say, a Backpage or an Eros. Now here's where it gets weird. What about sites that are dedicated to sex workers but not to promote their business, such as harm reduction, such as advocacy, such as there are some sites dedicated where sex workers can talk to one another about how to do their business more safely, how to discuss potential customers and blacklist them if they can, if the customer or John is violent or rips them off or has a disease. How can you communicate that and sort of get the worst of the trade out? Well, that is clearly can fall under the, you know, if we go back to promote or facilitate, is that facilitating? And I think it is. So an advocacy website would also be criminal. And this translates back to not just the operators of the website, but it can translate up to the provider. You are a hosting company offering that. So an advocacy site would also possibly fall into facilitation and be criminal in and of itself. I think for sites that aren't dedicated to sex work, but instead just sex positive, does that require them to have a duty to monitor? All of a sudden, does, say, FetLife, because I'm sure there's some people on that site that are not doing it sheerly for the for their own amusement, but instead to pay the bills. What happens? Does FetLife have to monitor that? What about, I don't know, OkCupid? Do they have to parse all the messages between participants looking for words that may imply that this is something commercial? And I don't see any guidance on how far that goes. Do you now start grepping? Do you now start grepping messages for terms like generous, sugar daddy? You know, and this is the problem. This question comes back to every provider. And I've been in these discussions in these fora where you had corporate accounts going, I don't know what this does to us. So they took a very, you know, if you were an OkCupid or a FetLife, you took a very dramatic approach and said, either I'm not going to, you know, I'm going to aggressively do stuff. If I identify that you've ever been a sex worker, just kill, you know, knock them off the site, because the risk is so high to you as that provider that all of a sudden you are now liable for the speech of others. You're now liable for the actions of others on your site. So while I don't think it creates one legally, operationally, I think it does. I think it makes you all of a sudden, if you're concerned about your business, because if your business is 99.9% not sex workers, that 0.1% definitely impacts you. All of a sudden, it's now criminal liability. So you're going to aggressively just take any question out. If I find that you once posted on a sex worker site and now you're using OkCupid years later, maybe that's enough to kick you off. Because from a overabundance of caution, maybe I make you go away. So I've heard of several sites that have either curtailed their operations or just shut down, saying like, we don't know the liability and we're too small, not profitable enough to figure this out or solve the problem. And thinking of it, even sites that did try to solve this problem before SESTA-FOSTA, say, for example, Craigslist. Craigslist, for about 18 months, hired people to review ads on both personals and the erotic services section to figure out what, you know, is this a banned act? Are you advertising a sex line, which is legal? Are you advertising webcamming, still legal, but if the sex worker shows up at your place or you show up at theirs, okay, you're gone. And think how expensive that is. You've taken something that was essentially upload ad, you know, put some contact information. That's the last I hear from you is Craigslist, and I bill you. Simple, right? I can automate all that. All of a sudden now I have to have actual human eyes on an ad to figure out whether or not I could run that. It increases the cost of acquisition so high to unreasonable amounts. So you just cut it out. You're like, I can't profitably put this ad up. Instead, I'll just, you know, put up more ads for, you know, trying to get rid of my charcoal grill, $5. So many sites that have shut down or curtailed their operations. Then what about what I think of as mere agnostic sites, sites that have nothing to do with sex, except that it's one of many things we discuss as human beings, like Twitter, Reddit, or Linode, you know, as an example, right? Does Twitter have to now look through, because there are sex workers that use Twitter to advertise, does Twitter now have a duty to now look through their transmissions and say, I think you're a sex worker, I have to either shadow ban you or kick you off the site. For a company such as Linode, where you're second removed, right? You give a great deal of power to individual users to do other things on it. Do they now have to go through and figure out what you're doing with individual VMs? What about, I don't know, just a basic web host? Do I have to now figure out what you're selling and have some kind of authority to regulate what you do on what used to be very, very thin margin sites? And I think SESTA-FOSTA does put a requirement. It puts a risk that someone uses your site to do this thing. It eventually makes you... The cost is so high that I think you will see people either pre-filtering or possibly stop hosting inside the United States and move the data centers, maybe move the company outside of the continental United, outside of the jurisdiction, just to avoid the liability. So That's an interesting attempt to fix a problem using a very, very blunt tool. And I'm not going to go into in depth into individual groups that are in the space attempting to regulate it the old-fashioned way. Law enforcement, advocacy groups who have said, you know, I'm thinking of law enforcement people I know who work on actual child sex trafficking who don't like this because now it drives it all underground. It's now harder to find those people. When you had fairly open sites dedicated to the sex worker trade, you could fairly quickly grep through the images to find known. You could track people by the images that went up because, you know, you want to generate an ad. You're going to use existing pictures that looked pretty good. You're not going to do a new photo shoot for every. If you move someone around, are you? You relocate. So you're. It made it hard. The law itself is actually will make it harder to enforce those laws, but it puts the onus now on providers. So it's going to dry up a different section of that market, which maybe wasn't a big problem. So that's SESTA FOSTA. Other thing that I think is interesting, and I wanted to pick this out, the SEC, Securities and Exchange Commission, has been fairly lax on cybersecurity for, of all the large regulatory agencies, SEC has been trailing. You had Office of Comptroller of Currency, you had the FDIC, you had the NCUA, which is the credit union regulator, and you had the Federal Reserves, all fairly aggressive about cybersecurity. They got together and generated the FFIEC Examiner's Handbook, which was a fairly lengthy set of regulations about how to do IT and how to regulate IT risk. SEC was always behind on this because they took a rather laissez-faire approach. They've been talking about cybersecurity. They were the first one to mandate or at least put strong recommendations in to follow the NIST cybersecurity framework. But recently, they changed their guidance, and regulators put out guidance, which is this is the law, this is the regulation, but this is how we're interpreting it, and it's usually fairly useful information if you have to live with it, if you're working in that industry, or you are advising someone in that industry, and one of the things they did was they changed what disclosures you had to do to investors. Every quarter you have to disclose risks to your company. We believe that we're going to lose money because of X, Y, and Z. We're going to make this acquisition. The risks are here. And all of a sudden now cybersecurity breaches have been part of the guidance for a while. If you suffer a breach, you have to, and it has a material effect upon your bottom line, you would have to disclose it. But now they've added risks. So an unrealized breach, you have low quality security, you haven't been breached yet to your knowledge, but you know it's a high enough risk that would affect investors' decisions in buying stock in your company, now has to get released. So an Equifax are a target. If you knew that you had a serious gap in your controls, even if you haven't been breached yet, you have some kind of duty if it affects decisions that a potential investor would make. Withholding that information exposes you to liability. And I'm thinking many of us who work for larger companies know of something that keeps you up at night. That large unencrypted database that is on the public internet that holds a large amount of customer data. And if that got breached, that would be really embarrassing, but it hasn't been popped yet. Well, all of a sudden, because that is not a breach, but a risk, you may have a duty to report it to investors. And I haven't seen where this has happened yet, but it's sort of that sort of Damocles hanging over boards of directors. If they know, now they have a duty to disclose this. And it's this is a broader requirement than, say, state breach notifications are breach notifications under HIPAA. Because if you look at like state breach notifications, most of them are for healthcare data or if it can cause a financial impact. So your identity plus, say, your credit card information or your banking information, that has to get released. But not just public information, not just your name, address, and maybe something embarrassing about you. Like, for example, the Ashley Madison breach a couple of years ago. If credit card information wasn't released, it won't trigger quite a few state laws because you can't use that information for direct financial access to your accounts. It's embarrassing. It has an impact in your life, but it's not, you know, probably larger than credit card gets breached. You're like, wow, I just lost a credit card. I'll get a new one issued in 3 days and I have to go through. Instead, getting your entire Ashley Madison chats, you know, that's especially, you know, knowing that you've probably been talking to a chat bot is probably more embarrassing and more expensive. You know, and we have up until now really haven't given a lot of like financial value to that. You know, think of the, you know, embarrassing things you might have said elsewhere and that coming up. Well, under most state breach laws, that getting dumped isn't, you know, it's merely embarrassing. For example, like breach notification for HIPAA, it requires PII and healthcare information for it to justify having to to tell you as the data subject, well, we happen to leak this. But instead, the SEC guidance is just a risk of a significant breach if it impacts investors. So next one I want to go into, and this is one of those, it's actually a movement back of the capability of a regulator. Federal Trade Commission, after a couple years ago, actually, I'll just mention it. FTC regulates interstate trade. And they have the ability to fine or penalize a company if they are doing unfair trade practices. And unfair is fairly broad. It might seem vague, but usually there's 70 years of precedent to describe that. Sometimes you have such bad trade practices or so sleazy trade practices that they are unfair and the FTC can come fine you. And in a case, they can regulate both deceptive and unfair. Deceptive would be, I lied to you about something and you were hurt. Unfair is just, this, even with no lie, is still so bad, we're going to have to hit you. Where this involves cybersecurity is a case called Wyndham, the hotel chain. Wyndham claimed to have effective security for especially credit card data, and they didn't. No controls, laughably bad security. One flat network for each hotel, PCI data, credit card data was transmitted unencrypted on that network. Information about your stay, and they had been breached. And FTC got involved by saying, well, let's see, you claimed on your website that the security of data held by Wyndham was industry standard. Here's how we use encryption. Here's how we do this. Here's how we do this. And they didn't do any of it. So they file suit against Wyndham, claiming both unfair and deceptive trade practices, and they win. And the opinion was broad enough that it allowed the FTC to essentially regulate really, really bad security. Yeah, laughably weak security was an unfair trade practice. And this was interesting because this is the first time it allowed a what I think of as a general or unregulated industry. We in the United States for security and privacy tend to do it industry by industry. Banking is regulated by Graham-Leach Bliley. HIPAA and high tech regulate the laws that establish some minimal data standards for healthcare. But the vast other businesses out there don't have to meet any requirements unless there's a state requirement. And this allowed that a company in any space, if it was holding customer data, had some minimal standard that they had to meet. And after Wyndham, the FTC kind of goes and says, well, I guess we're the cybersecurity regulator for everybody else. And they start doing investigation work. They hand out, they file suits, they hand out fines, they do their thing, and they get a consent decree against a company called LabMD. And they basically require LabMD to put in a bunch of controls that seem to be expected controls you would think would be a decent security. And LabMD sues them, saying, you don't have the power to make us do these things. You have the power to regulate cybersecurity. You are allowed to say you have weak cybersecurity, and that's an unfair trade practice, but you cannot specify which controls. So, because they basically said, like, you know, put in these like 15 controls, use encryption, all the stuff you would find in, say, like ISO 27001 and 2, are the SANS top 20, you know, basic stuff. Nothing really difficult. And LabMD wins, saying, like, look, it's an injunction. It's an order to not do a thing. Well, and in order to not do a thing, you cannot make me do a thing. And it's you know, legal nitpickery, but it essentially says, well, they cannot make a company follow a specific set of rules. They can say you're acting so badly you have to stop, but the attempt to go and make a standard that you can follow, and as a security professional, especially someone in like the risk space, it would be great. Like, oh, those are the rules. I can audit against that. Awesome. You know, just bring in some auditors. They go through, they ask you, you know, 35 stupid questions about databases and you're done. Great. You know, I mean, how many people have gone through an ISO audit this year? Yeah, you know, I'm sorry. But at least though you can go and say, look, there's a rule, set of rules. They might seem stupid from time to time, but at least at the end of it, you can say, we meet most of them. We're close. Some are lies, you know, or what I like to think of as, you know, the tapestry that, you know, a lot of the work of these people is to map a bunch of a tapestry of lies into Excel by filling out vendor security assessments saying, sure, we do these things. Sometimes, never, you know, are you going to check? No. Okay. Sure. Can I get out of here? You know, do you use blue encryption? Okay. Yeah, whatever. No, I did that for a little while. And I remember there was one question on the questionnaire we had to ask, and it was about money laundering. It was the OFAC barred list. And we were in healthcare. I'm like, why is this here? Who on earth is doing money laundering? And I asked corporate counsel, and they're like, that shouldn't be in there. I'm like, well, I've been auditing people for 2.5 years. And some companies are like, yeah, sure, we do that. And it was not difficult to do. There's a public website where you can see who's banned under money laundering. It's like, okay, sure. It's like, that's supposed to be this different list of people banned from Medicaid. I'm like, it's in your spreadsheet, man. You have an army of auditors asking deliberately stupid questions. And like, oh, well, we'll change that. And of course, how did they change that? They added the Medicare question. They didn't remove the it's like, okay. But right, but the advantage is we can work within that framework. You can test and validate and go, we've done. We meet that standard. The FTC can't come after us. But instead, it's like, you can't have laughably bad cybersecurity. And I'm sure we all, you know, like, so what? You tell war stories and you watch, you know, that's how you, you know, interview the staff. And at the end of it, you go, well, you didn't laugh at all of them, so your security can't be that bad. Or didn't one up me with, oh, you should see how we hold patient data. It's all secure on Pastebin. You know, And that's the, you know, so it's nice to be able to set a standard. Unfortunately, the LabMD case says the FTC can't mandate a standard. Like, okay, fine. Because I would love to see that. You know, just from a simplicity, there's a set of rules. We can follow those rules. We do the thing. We're done. But no. Okay, GDPR. Who here has been under a rock and hasn't heard about this? It's great because I have a few clients who have extensive European operations, and a lot of my job was to convince the European-based IT people that they weren't going to go to jail. Because as much beat up as we had about it in the United States, I could only imagine like every ad in every IT rag, every radio spot was like, GDPR is coming and it's going to eat your children. You know, so scope, EU data subjects, people in that part of the world, that's the scope, their data. When to affect May 25th, the sun came up on May 26th. No, there are people like, they're going to show up and audit us on day one. Like, they're a bureaucracy. You think they're going to be that fast? Nothing happens that quickly. Of course, you know, I can imagine from a regulator standpoint, it's nice to like, you're afraid of us. Good. You at least do some things. But the panic, right? So, you know, the sun came up the next day and there was a maze of twisty little privacy policies all alike. And that the best use of the GDPR, I think, was to find out all the places that you signed up for an account and go, oh, I signed up for that 2.5 years ago. I don't remember why. What does this company even do? Oh, you know, it's like finding out that, you know, the number of HR-based companies, like you had to pipe the resume through them. It's like, that's all you did? That's the data you have in me? Huh. But you have this flurry, and now everyone's kind of waiting to see what happens, because it's easy to put up a privacy policy. Like I said, it's a tapestry of lies, right? Of course we do all these things. You know, I remember doing a basic, like, let's see if you're ready for GDPR. How do you get your customer data? And like, well, there's a database. I'm like, where did that data come from? And their head of marketing is like, I have to know where it came from? Like, It's like, if you're going to say it fell off a truck, I'm going to be really impressed, because, you know, like, well, we just had it. Like, right, now you got to, okay. Learn opt-in. You know, like, hey, dear Bob, we have a lot of data about you. Please opt in if you would like us to continue marketing to you. Like, that's how you're going to have to get yourselves out of that, because now all of a sudden you have to treat personally identifying information kind of like toxic chemicals. You want to know where they are. You want to make sure that the children can't eat them, and you want to kind of be aware of them because they're valuable in both a positive and a negative way. You know, data subjects have rights, and you have to figure out how to implement those rights in your infrastructure. And some people found it very easy. Some people found it very hard. Some people are just going to lie about it and wait. And that's probably going to work for a year or two. Because we all heard this, you know, 4% of gross revenue. The more dangerous thing is they can do a stop data processing order. You cannot process this data. You have to get rid of it. And if that's kind of core to your business, you're like, but that's, you know, stop processing French data subject information. Well, that would annoy the shit out of Facebook. But imagine if you're like a France-only company. You're like, what? I have to stop doing that? Yeah. And all of a sudden, so it's a large set of these things that you all of a sudden have to now do, and you have to figure out how to implement it. And there's a lot of, you know, I foresee that GDPR will have a couple of effects. One, it will be like the new HIPAA, in that all sorts of bizarre things will be blamed on it. Like, the number of people who said to me with a straight face in IT, like, HIPAA requires us, what was the one? HIPAA requires us to have keyboard covers, like the old dust covers. And I'm like, what? It's like, because people, it's like, you take them off before you type, unless, like, you're in a really dusty area, and then you get those, like, weird plastic things like you see at auto body shops or whatever. Like, where did you get this? Well, it's HIPAA. I'm like, can you show me in HIPAA? Like, let's traipse through here. No, it's not there. People will be blaming the same stuff on GDPR, you know? I mean, like, think, this happened, I heard this happened, like, this week with British Airways. Someone, like, tweets angrily, you know, because that's, you know, how I use Twitter, is, you know, old man yells at cloud. You know, I'm kind of afraid, you know, thinking about the previous talk with the idea of, like, sort of a social networking score. It's all my social networking is me screaming at some kind of provided service that just wasn't working. And they'll go, like, you have a lot of anger about Sonos. And I do. Because it breaks in strange, freaky ways. And all I do is complain about it. And I'm afraid that that's going to be how I'll be remembered. Dude could not get speakers to work in his house. So someone else is kvetching at British Air for, like, this flight was delayed, then it was canceled. Okay, yeah, that happens. And the response of British Airways social networking people was to say, please tweet at us all this personal information. Like, and it was not just like, you know, what flight, which would be the appropriate thing. Like, you know, that flight with the plane, yeah, because, you know, we're British Airways, we only have one. You know, please be more specific about the flight you are on. Except that they asked for, like, you know, your name, your address, the last four digits of, like, the credit. Like, you just did that in a tweet? Like, why isn't your, like, here's our customer service line, call it. But someone, I was like, oh, GDPR requires it. Like, no, but you're going to blame all sorts of weird shit because you misinterpreted it. And that's going to take a little time for it to work out. Like, it will be fixed in, like, 12, 14 years. Because people still bring up stupid stuff about HIPAA. It's like, I remember once, actually it was work, but it was someone saying, like, oh, you can't discuss this thing. And, like, it's two coworkers discussing their health with one another. HIPAA isn't involved because we're not at a healthcare company. You know, unless one of you is treating the other, and then you're even more incompetent than I thought. HIPAA doesn't get involved. And, like, but we want a HIPAA assessment. And of course, my response was, okay, yes, yeah, is this billable? Okay, yeah, we'll definitely, HIPAA does require this. Sure. Okay, GDPR fallout. We still don't know things like what's reasonable security under Article 32, acceptable implementation of rights, how to actually do that in a cost-effective manner, how are we going to enforce it, because every member state has its own regulator. Some will go after the worst actors, like Cambridge Analytica. Some are going to go after Big Game because it gets you a better name. The Privacy Shield suspension is interesting. If anyone caught that, the United States may get decertified, and we will instead have to add data export to all contracts. So my approach for that is wait and see what happens. Do the things like the appropriate privacy policies, try to implement the rights, and then wait. Don't freak out. I'm going to skip the Cloud Act. So trends, geofencing, I see, where you're going to stovepipe your German information in a German data center or an EU data center, and it's not going to talk to your US stuff. You're going to claim to do so. Yeah, we're compliant. We're fully compliant with YOLO 2017. Withdrawing from markets, if you decide that you don't get enough business out of that regulatory space, just sell your client data to someone else, they'll take it up. There's going to be a flurry of right-to-be-forgotten requests. There will be endless fights because the amount of shops I've seen that have added GDPR language to some contracts but not others, so you get, here are the four things you have to sign, and they're all different. Good job. Predicting the future.
Will we have a GDPR?
No.
Yep.
Yes. California's already passed one. It reads like GDPR. How they're going to implement, how everyone's going to implement it is to be determined, but we may see something equivalent. There are enough people bent out of shape. I think it may happen. Now, of course, what may happen is that, and I'll skip ahead, you might have some states implemented, and then the feds may come in and preempt it. We'll pass a federal law that will be, we'll just say, more palatable. I think I've got time for a few questions.
Thank you. Going back to the SEC question for a moment.
Okay.
A quick two parts. Has that been legislated? We saw a lot of OEIC data coming out that they've been kind of fuzzy. So when you say that it's moving to a general best practice or there's a need to disclose if there's a potential breach,
mm-hmm.
does that follow any specific standard like best due reasonable cause, or has that been...
It's going to be if there's a risk of breach that will affect the a financial statement. So I don't think there's going to be any established rule for that yet.
And then the follow-up to that is you mentioned that they have looked at a cybersecurity framework. Have they done any pull-through work on 53 to talk about minimum controls?
By cybersecurity, the multicolor thing.
Yeah.
Not the... Would you like a framework? Would you like it to be 800 pages? No. So it doesn't mandate the 800 series. It mandates that you do the pick your own adventure.
So CSF has no actual control content in it, though.
It mandates others.
Right.
So you can follow. You need the controls, but you can pick from ISO, COBIT.
Will be the SB-53.
Well, no, it doesn't mandate. There are other ones in it.
Yeah, that was my question. Yeah. Is there going to be pull through to any one of the specific standards?
No, I think it's just going to be, we meet that. Because even then, CSF doesn't actually require that you follow any of those. You could make up your own if you're a sadist. Okay, I'm out of time.
Any more time for questions or not?
No, but speak to him after.
Yep. All right,
thank you.